For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Chapter 4. So we actually just read Kohelet on Sukkot, which is really interesting. Some of the Megillahs, when you read them on the holiday, you're sure which holiday it goes with. For example, Megillah Esther goes with Purim, that's no question. Or Megillah Eicha, it's sad, that goes with Tisha B'Av. It's very easy to see that. The Megillah Rus with the receiving of the Torah and her becoming Jewish and converting, and that goes with the Shavuos. But Kohelet on Sukkot takes a little more work to figure out what it has to do with Sukkot. And we talked about this a little bit. One thing about Kohelet was that when a person has everything good, that's when he needs to get the message of Kohelet. When a person has nothing and they're poor and they are working hard just to put food on the table, it's very hard for them to think about the other things that are going on in life and what it's all about, and they just have to work in order to survive, in order to get to the next day. But when a person has things are good, and a person is satisfied, and a person then he starts to think, well, what's the deeper meaning of it all? Where do we go from here? What's it about? And King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, at the pinnacle of his reign, where he had everything a person could want, that's where he began to think about, well, what's important in life, and what do I want to what do I want from this world, and what do I want to accomplish? And in some ways, on Sukkot, we're celebrating, we're happy. Then it's time to think about what is really the deeper meaning of life. What's it all about? And so that's one idea of Kohelet, that it is a little sobering, and sometimes it's because when you celebrate, Sukkot is one of the few times that the holiday is called the holiday of joy, and some people feel there's a mitzvah to drink on Sukkot. To drink wine, or to some people take it too far. Some people without a mitzvah to drink get drunk, right? But some people feel that the purpose of Kohelet was to make sure that we celebrate and we go all out and we have a great time, but we still have the focus as what's it all about? Why are we doing this? How does it fit into the long term? The other idea we expressed was that a sukkah is a temporary dwelling. And it represents this world, that the things in this world are temporary. And in a certain way, that's the message of King Solomon, that things that happen in this world are temporary. He calls it, he has a different word, he uses the word hevel, which is like vapor. This world's like vapor, it just is a big cloud and a lot of, and then it evaporates. And what is permanent are the mitzvot and the good deeds and the things that a person does. Those have eternal qualities. Those last. If you got the latest car, the latest iPhone, you ate a good meal last night, that's very temporary. That goes up in a puff of smoke. That's a temporary kind of thing. But the permanent types of things, those are what we want to focus on. And so that's one of the reasons that this was the Sukkot message. Okay. So we're beginning chapter 4. This chapter is going to talk a little bit about relations with one person with their neighbor. In other words, talked about acquiring wealth. The previous chapter talked mostly about the different seasons, how there are different times for different things. And again, that's important. Some people, there's a time to build and a time to destroy. You got to know sometimes there's it's important to know when to stop and when to take a rest, and depends on the other, and that was the major message about there's a season for everything. But this chapter is going to talk about what happens between one person and another. Are people treated right? If you really look at this world, people take advantage of one another. They always describe it as like dog eat dog, or it's like the animal kingdom, where the bigger animals prey on the smaller animals, and the big fish swallow the small fish. We look at that as a tragedy. We're put into this world. In fact, the cardinal principle of the Torah is to look out for one another like you look out for yourself. We believe that there's nothing more beautiful and more wonderful than to care for others and care about others and want to do for others. So then you look in the world and you find out that people take advantage of those that have less than them. V'shafti, and I then returned and I saw Eskol HaShukim. I looked at all the swindlers, all the people that take advantage of others, all those that Ashuk is a kind of, he uses the word oppressors. That means somebody that uses their power over somebody else. And it looked at Shernashita that happened in this world that we live in. And you look at the different cultures where they have the people that are of higher birth take advantage of the people that are lower birth. And in almost every society it still exists where you have certain people that are take advantage of others or and he looked at that, he made Dimas Ashukim, and the people that are taken advantage of, they cry. They have tears, they have feelings. The Ein Lahem Menachem, and nobody seems to care. People don't people care about those that are winning, those that have power, those that have the money, but the people that are being harmed or they're being hurt, nobody's comforting them. We all know the position of the Jews during the Holocaust. Before the Holocaust, the Jews knew that they were in danger and they asked for help from the nations of the world and no one would take them in. Not even the United States. You know, there were cruise ships out on the next to Miami Beach. The St. Louis. It passed by and our good buddy Roosevelt wouldn't take them in. There was nobody wanted to help. People always want to say, what's in it for me? You know, I'll help if I get something out of it. But just to help because the person is in need of help. The challenge we run into in our times is that a lot of people that need help, first off, you try to help them, they can be dangerous. Because sometimes there are people on drugs and if they find out where your wallet is because you took out your wallet to give them money, then they might take advantage of you. So you sometimes have to be smart about how you help people. And then sometimes if you give them money, it's not helping them because it just helps them buy more drugs or more alcohol. And so, it is a good thing to figure out how to help people that have less than you do. I knew somebody that was laid up. She was not that well. But she wanted to help people, and she volunteered for some kind of social services where she would call people on the phone and check in and see how they were doing. Mm-hmm. And there are different groups that do that, and it was just helpful just to see if, you know, people need something, and if they answered the phone, they didn't answer the phone, sometimes for seniors, sometimes for... But the idea is that we should all try to in our lives, be in some position where we help people. Some people volunteer. There are people that volunteer at Torah Day School. They teach little kids how to read who need extra reading help. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing. You know, it's like there's so many things that people do to help. Sometimes it's helping somebody in shul get a sitter, find a place, know where to sit. There are just so many opportunities in life to help someone that doesn't have what we have or what we have or can use assistance in something. That's really what it's all about, if you could find a way to do that on a regular, you know, to do kindness. In the world, there are people that look at people that have less and they step on them. They overcharge them and they take advantage of them. Vein lemon, and there's nobody that comforts them. Verse 2, v'shaveach ani es hameisim, and he made a number of controversial statements which made people want to burn the book, so to speak, of Kohelis. Some people say that he deliberately said things to wake people up. Other people said it needed to be interpreted. But here he says people that are dead are better off than those that are living. What he means is that people that are living in an abusive world where people don't care for one another, they'd be better off not being here. We're here to be in a good world. Or if a person lived their life and was able to help people, he's better off than if he's in the world and he's abusing people. So it's a you know, we're put in the world to help people, not to harm people. Verse 3. V'tov mishnehem, and the best thing would be asher eden lo adayin lo hayu asher lo ra samaisa ra. Person should never have to see sadness. Doesn't break your heart when somebody's been hurt, you know, when someone's been taken advantage of, where someone harmed somebody less fortunate than them, and so that to have to witness that and to have to see that is just so distressing to see that happen. The worst thing is in the world, it's like a constant. You read the news, and all over the world, they're always the more powerful take advantage of these other countries and the civilians and the poor people, and that's an evil that takes place in the world. Ara asher nasa tachas hashemesh, underneath the sun. Okay, verse 4. He switches from, we're going to talk about a number of things that we see in life that bother him. So the first thing is people harming people that have less than them, or people taking advantage of people who have less than them. That's the first problem that exists in the world. And again, in our society, people try to sell people that don't have money or don't have, I always hate like these organizations that want to help people with their loans or their debts or their, and really what they want is to be paid, and some of the, a high percentage of them don't really help the people they claim to help.
No, they get high interest rates on the money. That's what they're in it
mm-hmm.
for.
Yeah. And a lot of the medical things, the vitamin companies and stuff, they make you think that they're going to help everybody, and they just want to make money off people. It's just a, you know, if they really do help people, that would be a good thing. But people are really looking out for themselves, and so it's a person has to see that. So that's number one. Number four. Varisa niyas kol amalas kol kishon amaisa. And I looked out at the working class and the people who are busy, and I noticed kihi kines ishmer ehu. Everybody's jealous one of another. Everybody wants what someone else has. And that's another big problem. So the first big problem is people that take advantage of those that have less than them, that abuse others. The second big problem is jealousy. People that they see what other people have, and they want to get it. That's also a big waste of time, because we all know that each person has what Hashem has a plan for each person. He gives them what they need. And you really can't change that. And what someone else has, that's not for you. That's what he's expected to have. Talk to the boss. Yeah, we don't want to take away what, you know, a person has what they have, and we're not meant to be jealous. And jealousy destroys people. There's so many people would be happy that I used to like my iPhone until I found out they have a new iPhone that's even better that I don't have, right? So when you see what someone else has, that creates the problem. Another problem. It's very interesting how he phrases it. You get the sense that he didn't tolerate fools very much. Mm-hmm. This is what he says here. He says, Haksio, the fool, he folds his hands and he eats his flesh. So you see in general that he never meant things literally, because nobody sits there and eats their flesh. But what they mean to say is that the lazy person hurts nobody but himself. He's destroying his life. He's just sitting. He should be going out and enjoying life and accomplishing things and doing things. And what does he do? He just sits there, you know. And he's meanwhile he's ruining what the wealthiest person is somebody that has time, you know. The Hashem or they feel good. And this person now folding the hands means almost like instead of doing something, he's just sitting there with his hands folded, like he's. It's a funny word. Almost means like he hugs himself. Actually, the word chovek. This translates to fold his hand, but the Hebrew chovek is to hug. It's almost like folds his hands. If you think it is true that there's a lot of things that are futile and a lot of things that appear to be a waste of time in the world, so but that doesn't mean you should do nothing. The fool who sits there and does nothing and just harms himself. People take all kinds of things that are, you know, they develop bad habits and they destroy their lives and they hurt themselves. That's not important. That's a fool. Six. Tov malech hafnachas. It's better to have, also a very interesting expression, one spoonful of nachas. Nachas is Hebrew Yiddish expression means things that are in that are quiet, that are peaceful, something that gives done in a certain serenity where a person is calm about it. It's better to have one handful in a calm, quiet way than two handfuls with when a person is amal ros ruach, in a bad mood, in a bad spirit. You know, like if a person, let's say they can have twice as much food, but if they're upset and they're in a hurry, it's not as enjoyable as having half as much, but being able to enjoy it. There's some people that have a lot, but they're always on the run. Their cell phones are always ringing. There's no calm. There's always tension. There's always shouting. There's a little bit, even a little bit less with nachas is better than more with, he calls it vexation of the spirit. The Hebrew means, ruos ruach means a bad mood. A little bit of food in a good mood is better than lots of food in a bad mood. That's kind of the way to put maybe the, that's a little better, bad mood rather. Because the word ra'ah in Hebrew is bad, and then ruach is like my, ruach is a person's spirit. So it's good to be even a little bit with nachas in a good, soft, easy, you know, relaxed spirit than lots in a, you know, in a bad spirit. So that was one glimpse of what he had to say or advice that he gave. Be careful not to be harming other people. Don't step. You don't succeed by stepping down on others. That's not the way to raise yourself. That's never been that's never been our value system, and that's one of the problems in the world that we see is that people take advantage of those that have less than them. People step on others. That's not what it's about. And then the next problem is jealousy, where people want what other people have. And then there's a third problem that people, they perhaps don't have either one of the first two problems, but they're lazy. They just sit there and do nothing. And by sitting there and doing nothing, they harm themselves. And then the fourth thing, again, just in quick succession, each verse here is really a whole lesson, is that it's important to be in a good spirit and a good mood. To have a little bit and be relaxed and calm is better than to have a lot and be in a bad mood, be vexed, be in a bad spirit. Now he's going to take another look. Vishafti, you could study that each time, how many looks he has. He keeps on saying Vishafti, and I went back and looked. There's a lot of things to see in this world, so he's making different observations. I guess he wants to show this is a different observation. He can't just talk about how bad the world is. There's got to be some good things. And so we're going to see now, he's going to give us some advice, really good advice. You know, it is true, the world, there's a lot of hevel in the world. There's a lot of vapor. There's a lot of artificial things that are not important and disappear. So now he wants to, we're going to see some positive advice. V'shaftani era hevel tachas ha-shemesh. He said there is something else that happens in the world that's hevel, that's a waste of time. Yesh echad ve'ein sheni. Sometimes there's one person who's just for himself. He's a loner. And there's no other person. There's no other person. He lives only for himself. He thinks only of himself. He's the only person important to himself. And there's no sheni. There's no one he shares life with. The Gandhi has no children. One of the problems in our society is that people don't want to have children because they're too selfish. It's a very, I mean, that's, they don't say it that way, but that's what it really amounts to, because I have a child, I have to work hard to feed him and take care of him. I don't want to do that, I'll get a pet. And so, and people never live like that. We know, like, you know, previous generations, that they never thought, like, you know, it's all about me. It's about the Jewish people, it's about the future, it's about the past, it's about my community. But there are some people that it's just about them. So there's some people that they work and there's no one else they share it with. There's no brother, there's no kid, and they work like it's never going to be done. And they're never satisfied. And Osher Lemi, so who's going to get all that wealth? Who are they working for? There's so much of life they miss out. It's one thing if you sacrifice for your community, for your family, for your spouse, for your friends, then you're living for other people. So life is worthwhile. But if you're, you're only alone and there's no one else that you're involved with, so who's going to get all the work that you do? What value is it? Gamze hevo ve'inin ra. That's a bad thing. It's bad to be a loner, to be only for oneself. You know what the best thing? Tova shnayim, two is better than one. And the next thing is going to say three is better than two. But two is better than one. Two people is better than one. Asher yesh lem schar tov ba'amlum. If you share with another person, so then you get a bonus. Life is much better. People don't like to go to restaurants by themselves. They don't like to eat the food. They don't like to go to movies by themselves. Because if you share it with someone else, then it's a whole different story. That's what life's about. By the way, the rabbis understood this for studying too. When you study, if you study with two people, it's much better than if you study by yourself. Most of the great study halls, people have what they call a chavrusa, which is like a study partner. In fact, if you look out there, you'll see sometimes people review things by themselves, but almost everybody's encouraged to. Two people, two heads are better than one. That's basically what it means. That even if you think you know more than the other, two heads are better, two people are better than one. Ki im yiful echad, and when you goof, when you fall, yachim is chavero, then your friend will pick you up. Ve'ilu echad, if you're by yourself when you fall, ain't shame, there's no one else to help him out. I mean, that's why it's important to be part of a group and part of a community, and we look after each other. 11. Gam imishku shnayim, and he says a metaphor: if two people are lying down, they heat each other up. They have the body heat, keeps each other warm. One person's all by himself. How does he stay warm? And so that's the power of two people. 12. The imyitzvu echad, if one person can be taken advantage of, can be overpowered, can be stolen from, hashnayim yamdu, two people can stand. Now, if you have three people, that's even better. Machusa mashula, three. When they make a rope, they take three strings and they twist them, and then even though each string by itself could be broken, when you have three strings, it's much stronger. It's very hard to break. So some people say that the three prongs refer to the forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, that the Jewish people, one of the reasons that we're so strong, that we're able to survive in alien cultures, is that we had three great traditions, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And so when we don't have just, if you think about it, other religions, there's just one guy, Mohammed, Yashki, whatever. So it's very easy to, it's the one, if you don't like the one guy, if you don't, you don't happen to like, Mohammed was on drugs, and, Yashki was whatever Yashki was. But if you didn't like it, so you're stuck. That's it. Whereas we have many different approaches. You've got Abraham had his approach with kindness and reaching out, and Isaac with his prayer, and Yaakov with the Torah, and it's a three. When you have different approaches, and it's multi-generational, so it's much stronger. It can't easily be can't be broken. One of the reasons that we see sometimes that you see Jews that have been very far from Judaism. They don't live in the big Jewish centers. They don't have they don't live next to people that would necessarily influence them, and they're drawn to Judaism. And there's no real explanation for it. Why they should? What should have drawn them to where they were? But the real explanation is that it's in their ancestry. That it within the they have this the three prong. For generations and generations of Jews who have been loyal to Hashem and the Torah and the mitzvot. And so when a person is born, even if they're living in the middle of nowhere, somebody up on high is pulling the strings, is opening a door for them. And so you find that people, Beth Jacob has lots of people like that who were in the middle of nowhere and had no connection to anything. I'm sure there are some people that live next door and someone said hi to them, I'll meet you at shul after kids. But a huge amount of people there's no reason whatsoever they should be coming to be our neighbors and coming to shul and joining our community. They were on a path that would never have led them to where they came, and somehow because of the three-pronged cord, because of our ancestry of the Jewish people, there's something in them pulled them to come to join the community or the group that they were part of. I myself experienced that as a child. In the city that I grew up in, I remember we used to make bar mitzvah parties. There were 100 boys in my bar mitzvah in the whole city that I lived in. You know, used to invite everybody from all three synagogues. We had a Reform, a Conservative, and an Orthodox. And we used to have like a bowling. Everybody, we made I think it was ice skating or roller skating or whatever it was. And from my class, I was the only one that became observant. Out of those 100 boys, I was the only one. And you would go 3-4 years up till you met somebody that decided to become observant, and you could go. And I don't know why, what it was that, why I should. I mean, everybody else in my class went their own, or in my Hebrew school, or in my city went their own way and developed their own family, and somebody pulled the strings and said, you know, exposed me to certain things and led me on. Everybody has their story like that, but we believe it comes from our ancestors, that once there's three generations of Jews of holy and righteous people, so it doesn't break so easily. It comes back. Now, there are many people that have left Judaism that will never come back, but it means that, but we do see, there were, you know, Europeans gave up on America. America was the Treifa Medina. If you read the books about it in that time, which is funny because we're in America and we find ourselves being, you know, relatively observant and keep many mitzvahs, and then we read Europeans, they felt if you went to America, that was like going off the side of the earth. There were people who could have escaped the Holocaust and gone to the West and to America. They didn't want to go because they didn't think it was possible to exist as a Jew in the United States, because the first people that came gave it all up. Some of them, they used to say, at the bottom of the Hudson are all the tefillin, that when they got, you know, they got to the Hudson, they tossed their tefillin off the boat, and this is a new world. And the idea that it comes back, that that something that was in our family for so many hundreds and thousands of years, it's not going to be, it's a rope that won't be quickly frayed, that there'll be people that find their way back. And I think they did the Pew report, they said 1 in 6 observant Jews today came from a non-observant family. That meant that they didn't keep kosher, they didn't keep Shabbos, they didn't belong to an Orthodox synagogue, and yet somehow on their own, if you're born that way, and that's the way your parents were, it's relatively easy. Well, I never went to a non-kosher restaurant, but if you had all of these things, and then on your own, you decided, hey, you know what, I think I want to pay double the price for my meat, I think I don't want to go shopping on Shabbos, I think I want to, do all these things, and have all these, you know, I want to fast on Yom Kippur, I want, you know, what does that? The answer is, it's this three-pronged cord, it's in our blood, it's in our
DNA.
It's in the DNA, that's right, there's the idea of spiritual DNA,
right.
That's the way they say. But many quote this pasuk of the three-pronged, you know, the in verse 12. Now, in verse 13, he gets on to a final theme, and he says this, Tov yelad miskin v'chacham, it's better to be a young whippersnapper, a poor young, it's not about what you have, it's about what you know and what you do with it, than to be a king who's a fool, who's old and foolish. When you're young, you have things to look forward to. You have life ahead of you. And a person who's old and set in their ways and not going to change, so he might think he's better off, but the young person is much better off. Somebody that's an old fool means that when a person practices foolish ways, they're like stuck to them. They can't change. They keep on the same things. And even if he's a king, the young person is much, who seems to be a poor person, is much better off. 14, because the poor person, mibeza surim yosalimba, he can be a king one day, and he can go out to rule, and he can do good things with his life. Ki gamba malchusa nolad rosh. Even if he started out poor, he can get there in some way. But the old foolish king, he seems to be wealthy, but he's really not. Re'isias kolachayim amahalkin. I looked at all the different people that go under the sun. Imayel l'sheni, and to the next generation that's coming out that will take their place. That's also a person always has to wonder, like, what comes after me? Like, who's what will be the end to it? In case the kola am the kola shahadat neim, there's no people don't end if they're part of a people where there are those that come after them. Gam achron lo yismuchu bo, and those that fall after a person, they won't be able to enjoy those things. Ki gam ze hevel baros ruach. This is also something that's a hevel. Let's see. I think he's talking about people that live and get replaced, and there's no, you don't even remember who was there beforehand. In other words, there are people that are just, they come and they go, and they don't leave any impression. They don't leave anything of enduring value. And so, there'll be people that come and there are people that go, and you won't even remember the person who was here beforehand. And so, then, without accomplishments, without doing important things in Torah and mitzvahs and kindness, so the person is gone. They were here, and now someone else is in their seat, you know, and someone took over for them. Then he has one last piece of advice that's quoted often. Shamor raglecha kashatelech, watch your feet when you go to the shul, when you go to the house of the Lord. So there are many different explanations of what this means, watch your feet. Some people say the people used to sit on the floor, and when you walk in the shul, sometimes you'd step on people. And you can't get to the house of the Lord by stepping on people. It doesn't work that way. So, in other words, when you walk, I suppose, like the Muslim countries where they sit on carpets on the floor, and so if you're going, you can't build yourself religiously if you get there by stepping on people. That's one way of seeing that, watch your feet when you go to the house of the Lord.
The translation here says your tongue.
Guard your tongue.
Guard your tongue.
Yeah. It's better to come and listen than to offer the sacrifices of fools.
I wonder how he gets that from the word. Raglecha is your foot. Yeah, I see that. He says tongue.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm sure, you know, some people say you shouldn't talk when you go. I think what it means is, by watching your feet, is that you have to be careful not to make mistakes when you're in a holy place, or not to... one of those mistakes people do is if they gossip, you know. That's a natural thing when you see people. So usually shul is a spiritual experience, but there are some shuls where they are very social, and they're social during the service.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, unfortunately, that leads to gossiping. Oh, did you see what so-and-so was wearing and so-and-so was doing? And it ends up being, it's not very spiritual when people start gossiping and they say things. So he's saying, watch yourself when you go to the house of Hashem. Watch your feet, so to speak, means watch what you do. Watch what you, you have to be careful, even when you do mitzvahs, that you, don't make a mistake. The Kav L'Shma Mites Ksivim Zevach. Be there to listen to, even when the fools seem to bring offerings, because they don't realize, sometimes we don't have patience with others, when we see what they do. But he's saying over here that we should be accepting of others, even the fools, when they, if they want to give or they want to donate, because they don't mean bad by it. Sometimes we're judgmental, especially when we come to shul. We think other people, the easiest thing is if you stay the service longer than someone else, that you look down on the people that leave. Well, maybe for those people they stay longer than they've ever stayed before, or maybe they prayed, you know, they did what they, maybe they have to go home to look after people. But it's our nature that we say, well, you know, that guy's leaving right after more. That guy came late, and so I'm better than him. I came 10 minutes earlier. Right? But unfortunately, we are that way. It's just, it's so easy to fall into that trap, to try to look at others and feel better than others, and we just have to be accepting of others. It's a and we all make that mistake. And so he said, you got to be careful when you go to, you know, the house of Hashem, not to get caught up in that and saying, you know, my present, his present, he's a fool. He started off talking about the jealousy and the abusing others, and unfortunately, we just live in a world where it's me against him, where it's just competitive. Sometimes people could get upset about who gets that piece of cake in Kiddush. You know, he got there first, I got there, you know, or he's ahead of me in the line. And it's just too easy to feel like that, because life is all about, you know, competition and running and getting. But it's not about that. We all get what Hashem wants us to get, and you know, a person has to be careful not to fall into that trap of that aggression of you know, letting people bother him and being upset about, you know, or, you know, let him have the piece of cake. He got the piece of cake. So if Hashem wants me to have the piece of cake, maybe I don't need the calories. He needs the calories. Or, but there are people that get really, really upset. You know, I was in line first, and he went ahead, and he got the last piece of potato kugel or whatever that was there. That's the superstar. So how was your yard? Oh, it was terrible. Someone else got there first. But it's just... it's not about the fighting with another person. In fact, the opposite. If you can help somebody else out and you say, oh, there's something there, looks good, can I get you something? I bring you this, or I think you have a good time going. And then it's much more meaningful. And so I think, you know, Shlomo HaMelech was able to look at it that way and be the, you know, the look at the world and see all what things are hevel, what things just evaporate, and what things have true meaning.
Okay. I'm going to let you know, next week we're on, 2 weeks from now, I have a Kashrus convention out of town. That's the first week in November, Rosh Hashanah, and so that week will probably be off. Let's see.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.